Folks, welcome to Recollect Season 4, Cross-Cultural, Episode Number 1. I'm talking with Annette Sanuk Clapsaddle, where we are wondering, where are all the acorns? Two women of color writers who left their colonized teaching jobs. I want to say something about Season 4. So it's cross-cultural. And all of these episodes of this season, I extend the conversation about Black women decolonizing to women of color, one of the internalized behaviors that makes capitalism and colonization work is being used and abused by the false system and not talking to each other about it. If we don't band together, we won't reverse the superiority lie that capitalism runs on. The point of this season is, yes, to laugh our asses off, but also to connect with and inspire each other through sharing our stories of being and getting free and whole and grounded. In episode 1, Annette Sanuk Clapsaddle, who is a writer, an educator, and a member of the Eastern Band of Cherokee, is in conversation with me, and we are both women writers of color and educators who have both just quit working our full-time jobs in colonial-minded educational institutions. At some point toward the end of this episode, we ask, where are the acorns? Literally meaning the lack of acorns from the oak tree. I realize after the playback that this is a metaphor for everything we're talking about. We begin the conversation by riffing off of a dumbass question that someone asked Annette when she worked in her reservation gift shop as a kid. Where's the reservation? They asked clearly they were looking for a stereotype of their salvation that they didn't find. This brings up a host of questions for the listeners. Where's your indigenous home? Yes, even white people have them. What colonized behaviors live in you? How do you go home inside and outside of yourself? How do you decolonize and pay your mortgage? What is marriage? Trust me, that's related. How do you make it work financially and do your heart's work? And lastly, where the fuck are the acorns? No kidding, like where are they? Have fun and remember, Recollect is subscription and donation supported. So if you like what you hear, drop some coins.
Yeah, so I really want to like start thinking about how, how we protect our outdoor economy, but also share what we know about our environment in effort for visitors, for outsiders, whatever, to take back, to learn themselves, right?
Like, yeah, right. I think when you were talking about, you know, the sort of the person who comes in and it's just like, where's the reservation? Mm-hmm. And who's getting this sort of like, how can I visit here? But then they're not taking anything away. And like you saying, like, I'm going to tell you the stories, and they spread out and they represent, you know, a lot of space and a lot of land and a lot of human geography, you know? Mm-hmm. That's why when I've been reading from Trinity, and this evolved as I was on tour, of saying to people, before I read to you, I'm going to make a request that you not separate yourself, but that you do the opposite from what you're hearing in this story. So don't listen to it and be going, oh, you know, oh, that Black family, oh, da 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 da. Like, this is a human story about one family, which we are all just like dealing with, suffering from, and on different levels, the impact of colonization and the ongoing, you know, wounds of it and wounding, you know, through it, you know. And so regardless to where you are on that circle, it's important to, if you hear a story, anybody's story on that circle, is to connect yourself to the story and how it is connected, how where they are in this circle is connected to the fact that y'all are in this circle at all, you
right.
know, rather than hearing the story, because I'd like to insist on that. It's like part of the ritual of I am not offering you some packaged up thing for you to feel like, oh, I'm glad I got a chance to hear about that Black experience, and I can take that now. And, you know, I understand. I got to visit the Black experience, and it's like, no, that's not what we're doing here. It's not what this is about. And it's my job as the person through which it came, through which the message came, to part of the message is before you hear it, to ask you to come to a place meditatively of understanding that you are human and that any separation is part of the lie that you have been fed of superiority mm-hmm. or inferiority, but you fall somewhere on the spectrum of what colonization did, which is diasporatize and separate humans according to a lie.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so it's like when people come up and are, and you know, even sort of even just hearing you say that, you know, where's the reservation? You know, and it's like, bitch, this planet is the reservation.
And it's like, are you going to feel different if you step over a line that the federal government, you know, established? Like, is that going to make you feel different about the fact that you're in the Smoky Mountains, right? Like, it is such a bizarre, people's concept of land and is bizarre to me anyway.
Yeah.
But I think the whole point is not just like if I'm talking to somebody who, you know, is white, cisgender, male, probably, like, you know, if I'm talking to somebody like that, I want to say to that person, you don't need to hear these stories or understand these perspectives just to make yourself a better person or just mm-hmm. to feel good about yourself. There's real value in problem solving and an understanding, a better understanding of our world by tuning into that, right? Like,
yeah.
by being aware and by engaging in it and asking questions. It's not about making you feel better. It's not about making me feel better that you know it. It's
right.
There's so much value in it, and you're missing out by feeling like you can walk away after you hear you have a book talk or read from your novel, right?
Yeah.
When you walk away, you just lost all power you got from that.
Yeah. It makes me want to spiritually snatch people, you know.
yeah.
Just snatch them into
get
place.
Get back here.
you come back here right now. But it's also like when sometimes, you know, when I've gotten, you know, like on the tour and on the talk, like those moments where I think the audience feels it, where I do feel like something ancestral comes into my body and I stop everything. And it's like, I don't care about what's supposed to happen, who's supposed to be talking, how we're supposed to, like the order in which I'm the moderator is supposed to ask me questions and I'm supposed to answer them. Like, we need to stop everything, you know, because I don't want to be a party to knowing that I'm in a moment where somebody said something where they need to be educated, you know?
Right.
And, you know, I was just thinking about, you know, those times where, you know, people ask me in the book about Africa, again, language, saying things that separate us and saying, you know, like, oh, it's so good. Like my favorite part of the book is where the Black people, where the Lees found their way back to Africa so that they can, and then they use the word, so that they can be more indigenous about how they're living their lives. And I usually stop them by saying, so what did you, when you recognize that, or when you read that, and when you felt that, do you know you had a reason that you were attracted to that section of the book and you felt that? What did you feel about your own life? And there's usually a long pause. And then a couple of times, and I would just point out the couple of times, because a few other times the person paused long enough to get it. But a couple of other times it's like, oh, we're going to really have to extend this. where the response was, and this is all paraphrasing to blend the two conversations, was more like, well, as a white person, I don't really have an indigenous. And I said, oh, baby. In the great lie, that's the part where you have internalized a lie.
Mm-hmm.
That you don't believe that before colonization, you were anybody.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That is such a clear way to put it.
Yeah. And then the conversation extended to, well, you know, I wasn't, and some people were brought places by force, and that's part of the colonization. We immigrated, and I said, but why did you immigrate?
Right. Yeah.
You immigrated for capitalistic reasons. Capitalism is the moving mechanism arm that helps colonization what it is and makes it work and keeps it going, because it's the driving force, it's the motivator.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's filled with like human bodies that make it work. So your people came to be inside the machine,
mm-hmm.
thinking the machine was going to feed them, but you were lied to. And now you're exercising part of the lie by separating yourself from me. Don't do it.
Yeah, you know, what I think is important about that also is that when people understand only half of that,
mm-hmm.
they try to claim a false tie to an indigenous culture that's not their own, right?
It's not theirs, yeah.
Yeah, so they're like, well, I should feel a, you know, some kind of tie to place. I'm just going to randomly pick, right? Instead of being like, no, that's not how that works, right? Like it's a two-part series, in, you know, and understanding that and understanding your role in capitalism and your role in colonialism, for all of us, you know, like just because I know my Cherokee ancestry doesn't mean I'm not part of capitalism and mm-hmm. colonialism and do things that keep that structure working.
Yeah.
As well, it does. And I think some people think a quick claim to being indigenous, whatever that means to them,
mm-hmm.
Absolves them from being part of colonization.
Yeah. And it's like, and no matter who it is, it's like an attempt to have absolution from pain. Because there's all kinds of pain on that spectrum. There's blame, you know, so there's blame pain and guilt pain. There is, I was done to so wrong that I just want to be somebody else pain, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of African Americans go that route. What mm-hmm. can I be? Can I be indigenously, can I be Native American? Can I be Ghanaian?
Mm-hmm.
Which is like, actually, no, you can't. Even mm-hmm. with that, you can acknowledge where you came from and you can go back and understand the pain. And you can understand how some of it is literally and figuratively in your DNA and feel that reconnection that might feel like it's in your spirit and in your soul to go back to your roots in the way that you can go back to your roots where you stand, but you're not Ghanaian. And mm-hmm. I had to learn that the hard way. I had to go and say, I'm not going to go to a tourist area. I'm going to go to the people, you know, like I want to go to Ghana to the people. And I want to like know my roots that way. And I want to be Ghanaian. And it's like, you can't. Because that's part of the pain of the wound. At that impact, that group of people, they have their own pains, and they became a group of people indigenously that can inform you, mm-hmm. but they aren't even where they were before. Mm-hmm. But they can inform you on how, where you are now, that what you all share in terms of where you were before it all happened, that now you can go back home where you are.
Mm-hmm.
So the women that I'm taking on this this retreat in December. May it happen all, knock on wood, to Ghana. I'm going to have some work to do with them. So we're going to do some work in September, but I'm going to, one of the things of the work with them is that we're not going back there for somebody to, touch your feet and say Akwaaba and give you an African name. That's not what we're getting ready to do. The work that we will do in September of figuring out what's going on in your life and how pained you are right now from the stuff, you'll go back, you'll go there, I shouldn't even say back, to your indigenous homeland to know now that the shit happened. I mean, we can't say that the shit didn't happen, but now that the shit happened, what is there inside of the way that you would have been and that you were that you can bring to where you are now to make change? And so it's like almost feel like if everybody, and for first of all, for white people to stop excluding themselves from this everybody of go home, would go home in that way and then bring that to where they are now, we would all actually be working from some of the same platform of like, get rid of the damn water bottles, the plastic water bottles that on tour. Oh my God. For me, the guilt of like, I drank
No.
a lot of water from plastic water bottles. Yeah. Anyway, yeah.
No, I yeah, I think that makes so much sense.
These people are gonna be blown up when you sit down at the, now you, it's like all the, I know the way your brain is probably churning, mine is churning too. And I'm like, when you go sit down on that panel, they're gonna be like, wait, what?
No, they're gonna be like, especially like I'm probably even more I don't want to say cautious, but I'll wordsmith some stuff, not to blow up the whole fucking place. But David, he doesn't care. He doesn't, and that's kind of why I'm glad he'll be sitting with me. I'm like, well, he said
He
it.
said, I second that motion.
I don't. No, I'm just like, and I guess that's why I really struggle with, I do a lot of writing, like contract writing to, pay the bills and stuff. And like I was writing for Our State magazine. I've done a lot for them, but I'm so, I just kind of can't do that anymore because you can't tell a complete story. You can't tell, you can't say what you really need to say to the people who read that magazine, because those people need to hear some truth about stuff. So, but I'm just like, I will limit probably my opportunities because of it, but that's okay with me.
Yeah, that's like me teaching in university. I have to work with my the things that I intellectually know, the ways in which I have internalized the superiority lie, but then there is having to deal with the mortal fear of what if I can't pay my mortgage
Yeah, I
and I
know,
end up
right? I need to be able to live to say the things that need to be said.
But then it's like, but then those two things, it's like the longer, the more aware I become, the more, the less time I can spend in spaces knowing better. But it becomes more painful to know better and to be in those spaces, doing the do anyway, which is why I couldn't work at Central anymore. It's like, it's like I just, what you were saying about the writing, what'd you say, like the you can't write the whole story. So within with me, in terms of like how everything in my life is integrated in its own ecosystem of being, my teaching, my writing, like everything that I'm doing, my even working in DEI spaces is all the same thing. But then when I am full time as opposed to visiting, coming for a visit at a university, I can't teach the whole story because there are these blockages of like you can do this and you can do that. But this other part that you do that fully integrates the students with their community, with the community around them, and fully integrates them into their voice and their capacity to say yes and no, like they know what they're talking about, and fully does any of that is in conflict to the university's decision to have superiority over them.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I get like, wait, what? You know, and that's, they don't say those words, but with all of their pushback, and we're going to write you up for this, and we're going to write you up that for that, me saying, you know, that's nonsense, don't you? You know, writing me up is just your visual way of taking me out into the public court as an HBCU to whip my ass so everybody can see it. Do you understand what you're doing? And then being like blown up by that and just going, ah, like, we can't handle her, you know? And you're going, you know what? And me being stressed out to tell you this is throwing me out of the trajectory of the ecology that I live in. And so then my body is stressed and my, you know, and it's just like, because my whole being understands it's okay if you have to run inside somewhere, you know, as a creature who might get hungry, and then you have to like eat outside of your normal, the ecology of what you're supposed to eat to survive. So you got to run in there and get something. But when I've been duped by the lie is when I am running in there to get something as if I am starving to death and I don't understand that I am not. You know, that's when my problem started coming in and I started getting very confused, like, wait, what am I doing? You know, and it's just like, I'm not going to starve to death and have to remind myself of that, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. And I think for me, it was also seeing younger, like when I left teaching high school, right? Seeing younger teachers getting scared, right? Feeling like they are hungry, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, and watching that, thinking, what the hell are you doing? Why are you not pushing back? I was like, because they're terrified.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I think seeing that happen more and more and knowing that even when I talk to them about it, they are just so scared that I was like, I can't, you know, be part of a system that maintains this. Like, I was talking to my husband about this because he works in the central office in the grants for our school system, but he used to teach and whatnot. And we were talking about how public ed was, it's a cult. Like, it is a cult mentality, you know? It is. Yeah. Like, you're in a cult because you believe you should give everything of yourself.
Yeah.
No matter the hours, regardless of pay, like, your body becomes part of this system, and you were made to feel guilty if you don't accept that and you don't buy into that and you want to take a day away, right?
Yeah.
You want to make a decision for yourself. And I was like, yeah, everybody is in a cult.
Like, if so you spend long. If you spend time to like, if you are in response to your body, which is again an ecology, because it's like these microcosmic ecologies inside of other ecologies, you know, so the ecology of your body, which is in full interaction with the ecology of nature, which most people don't think about that. They go, no, isn't my body in full reaction to the ecology of my job, which is capitalism? And it's like, nah, actually not, you know, which is why you reject it so much. But it's like, if jobs paid attention to the fact that we need to be first in response to our bodies, then they get afraid. So then they get afraid. It's the same thing that the individual gets afraid of. You know, they get afraid of, but what if that means that we don't make any money and we have to close because everybody is at home taking care of their bodies? In a twisted but beautiful way, COVID actually served as an example of when people's bodies are happy, when they're able to take care of their simple bodily needs all day long, your productivity goes up.
Yeah.
Because they're at home. So they're like, I'm thirsty. And they know they're at home. So they're in their safe space. So they privilege that. They'll put the thing on mute and go get some water.
Mm-hmm.
It's the bathroom, you know, they take care of that. I'm hungry. They take care of that. My kids need me right now. They take care of that. I need to get up and go for a walk. You know, people be like, I'd be on a walk and hi, I'm at work.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I lost my shit over COVID because we were teaching online and I, you know, like I would teach my classes, do my work, whatever. But during lunch, I would go ride my bike, right? And somebody on social media made like some comment about, well, not personally to me, but it was me and anyone else who posted about a bike ride or anything during the work day, because they chose to go into an office and sit, to do their work. And our school system was like, y'all can't be doing anything. I'm like, you're fucking kidding me. Like, I work all weekend too. I work till 9 o'clock at night, but I can't ride my bike from 12 to 1, even though I have no responsibilities then, So I think that was like, they don't even get it, right?
Yeah, they
You're
don't get it.
not going to get as much work out of me now. Good job.
Yeah, exactly. You just defeated your purpose. And I would say, and I don't know if anybody got it, but when I decided to go back and work at Central, and for me, it's not Central itself, it's just the whole university system. Like all of it is, it's like, oh my gosh, what a problem. I was going to say problem child, but what a problem situation, But one of the things that I said upon hire, and I think I was talking to myself mostly, is I said that one, I won't suffer, So I said this at my second interview. One, I won't suffer. And I was asked, well, how long do you plan on staying? And I said, relationships are good until they aren't. So I was given all of these kind of answers that for me, they were like, I was talking to myself, because for the people I was talking to, I think they were like, what are you talking about? You're not supposed, that's not, they were looking at me like, don't you know the answer that you're supposed to give? Yeah, but it was like, I don't want to suffer. So I'm gonna say that outright, so that and about like, how long do you plan on staying? I'm not gonna tell you. I will stay the full extent of my contract. It's just like, why am I gonna tell that lie about, as if I know what I'll discover here and what this relationship will bring. I don't know that. That's like saying, and pardon me for people who are married, if you're married and really believe this, I just, that was so, that was so, even the way I came into that was so inappropriate.
Oh no. I even think I know what you're gonna say, and I think I
But
agree
like,
with
yeah,
it.
until death do us part.
Well, exactly. Like I wouldn't, and I don't
It's
tell my
like
husband this
that's
often, but
the
like I don't believe in marriage. Like I think it's a stupid thing, but I was so young when I did it and things are okay. But it's
Yeah.
like that's
I believe it. I believe in it
until it doesn't work.
until the lesson of impermanence does you part.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be death. Well, we have to go there,
Yeah,
so.
that's true.
There's other things that could do. There are little deaths in life, that could do you part. It didn't have to be you just like, it's time to go, but I'm waiting on death.
I don't like you at all, but till I keel over.
Exactly. Anyway, all the things. What are you So what are you doing now that you're not working at the high school anymore?
Well, doing a lot of like contract writing, like I mentioned, and then teaching writing workshops. And I'm gonna teach like one class in the spring online for University of Idaho, just because I don't know if you know Leah Hampton, but she's a friend of mine. She has moved to Idaho to teach. And so she's kind of hooked me up with a just because I the only college courses I've taught have been like dual enrollment with younger students. So just to do a little bit of that. But the goal really is to get was to get through year two, kind of doing this just piecemeal kind of work so I can finish this novel. And then I'm incredibly, incredibly fortunate that I'll have some financial stability starting in January because my dad owns some business properties in Cherokee, and he is transferring them to my brother and myself. So I'll have rental income from that.
Oh, which good.
Like that, you know, and that on top of like I can have tribal health care. We have paid off our house. My kids' college is paid for. Like,
yes.
I looked at my husband, you know, a year ago or whatever, when I decided to leave, and I was like, if I can't do it, nobody can. So why would I stay
in
that system when I have been gifted so, you know, so many opportunities? So it's, you know, a lot of people ask, well, how do you do it? How do you you know, afford to write full time? I'm like, I can't give you advice because it's not fair for me to do that, you know. Right. I have access to things other people don't. So so that's how I am keeping food on the table, because my husband, he doesn't make a lot of money. I mean, he makes a good salary and whatnot, but it's not like I have a sugar daddy that's gonna take care of me. Not yet. No.
You better stop. Yeah, but it's good for people though to hear, and I think because it helps them to. For me, it helps like to like the inspiration of like, well, how are you doing? Like everybody else does it a different way. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, how are you making it work? And that only makes good sense too, because it's like, if we were living, you know, off of just sustaining, like, I won't say just sustaining ourselves as being creatures in nature who would sustain yourself from the system around, from the ecosystem that you're in, then we would still be having like conversations about like, well, how do you do yours? And something that might work for a minute might not work the next minute because things around you shift. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, there was a period of time where I was like, okay, I'll rent out the house in Hillsboro, and then I will rent in Durham so that mm-hmm. I still own the property. But then, you know, the surplus of that rent is paying my rent.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can also, it plays a little bit of my mortgage and all of that kind of stuff, which is not what I'm doing now, because I sold the house, you know, 20 something years later. But actually that was part that made me so afraid to sell it, because I was like, but it has provided this and that and the other. And it's like, yeah, but that time has changed. Yeah. The things around you have shifted. So that's not even what you want anymore. So yeah, but it's just like, but then when I would hear other people say some things about, you know, what they're making work, then I was able to sort of figure out, well, let me do a different add-on, or let me do a different piece over here. And yeah, and so right now I'm trying to, I've got to condition the soil here. Because I bought this house in Durham where I, you know, did some work to make the studio. This is the outdoor screened in studio, by the way. I don't know if you can see it. It's got a little ceiling fan and it's pretty good square footage. And there's so it's like a room, but it's screened in. It's the couch I'm sitting on, you know. Here's the door. And that's the screened in studio. And then I've got the part at the front of the house that I redid for people to use. I'm going to really get into that this fall, because it's taken a year to do all these things, and built a stage down there in the yard. But anyway, just kind of running on the combination of faith that I know what I'm doing. And even if it's not providing the kind of cash flow, it's ecologically providing for my mental and spiritual self. And so I'm trying to condition the soil, because one of the things that I had in the other spot, because it was out in the country, was that the soil was so rich. So I grew so much food for myself, my child, my other child was already grown, for the studio participants, you know, for all of it. And so that's something that I want here. And so the challenge is different. It's about me learning how to condition soil more rapidly than being like, okay, I need 4 years worth of compost. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a good point about it's constantly changing. And one of the things I keep telling myself, like I have to, Because there have been moments where it has been, tight, financially. In fact, August, September will be the tightest months that I have since I left. But just kind of a reminder that I am safe, right? Like, I have a home. I'm growing a garden, so I'm not gonna starve. Just like in the whole scheme of things, like especially if you think globally, I am super safe. I am super secure. And no, I can't, I'm not gonna go get a latte at the coffee shop every day, but it's gonna work out. And it has, like, it's like when it gets tight, something shows up, right? Like I said, this is like one of the tightest months I have. And I just got an email today. It was like, will you write a real quick, we're on a tight deadline. And so will you write a real quick intro for something for $600? I'm like, heck yeah. Like that'll take no time at all. But it just like, I think if you're just doing things for the right reason, the world provides.
And then
Maybe
trusting.
that's really optimistic, but
No, it's I think that is the way to be with it. And then also if you trust your ingenuity, like one of the things I noticed even in the year, so I was like, okay, I'm gonna go back when I had said I was done teaching in universities before, and I was like, I'm just gonna go back for a year. What can it hurt? But I hadn't had the kind of like awareness of that, no, you need to stop. And so in that year, one of the things that I noticed immediately, well, I know it's a lot of things immediately, but one of those was that my ingenuity, like there's a like a center inside of my brain, like was just off, like the sun went down. And it's, I think, because we have to be alert, and ask yourself, well, how am I getting that? Well, how am I resourcing this? And you have to be thinking what I used to say, immediate, short term, and long term. And you have to have those things in your brain and be, like working to provide for yourself in the environment. And then when it's like, no, I'm going to get a paycheck, all I have to do is show up and be abused. Then the ingenuity center, which would be, hunting, gathering, figuring out what the weather is so to know if it's time to move or not. All those things are that are in our way back, ways of being that are in that's in our DNA. That part of the brain that has to figure out how am I eating next year? I might have it figured out now, but I feel that a drought is coming, or I see, and this is something that I've seen, which I'm like, uh-oh, I need to ask myself, what do I know that that means? Or I see that there are no acorns. That has freaked me out this fall. But then I'm like, don't be freaked out. Ask yourself, what do you know that it means? And I don't know if it's just in our area. So I'm pretty committed to hiking more. So it's not here at my house where there's lots of oak trees, no acorns. So I went on a hike in Orange County, in one of my favorite places where I know where the acorns are. And do you know Okanishi Mountain? So
I don't think I do.
I hiked up that, one of my favorite hiking spots, because it's got an overlook and stuff. And because I'm like, I know where the acorns are here. And I found acorns that were decayed from last year.
Ooh, that makes me wonder because
Not
thinking about
one
it,
acorn.
I don't know if I've seen a lot. I'm about to go, I've got to go pick up my son at Deep Creek and I need to get in my trail for the day. So I will pay attention to that too, because that's a good point. I don't think I've seen a lot of acorns and they should be right now.
So I've been to be honest, I first noticed it from the squirrels, because they were just they would their behavior. I was like, what is your problem? And they were taken. So there's a cedar tree right here, and they were knocking down all of the, like, filling my driveway with the nip, like biting off the end so that the end that had the pine nuts on it would fall. So they were in the tree, like biting, 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 until the driveway was full. Smelled great, but And then they were going and they were collect, they were, then they were like, it was like process number two. Now let's get the, off of the little pieces we bit off. Now let's separate the pine nuts from it. And I'm like, what are you, what is happening? Like, I've never seen you all do this. And then I was like, wait. And I was like, they don't have any acorns. And then all my hikes around here, right here in Durham, I was like, no acorns. I went on all of them, no acorns, except for decayed ones from last year. So then, so far, as far as I've gone, is then to go out in Orange County and say, well, go on another one of your hikes out there. Are there any acorns? No acorns.
All right. Well, now I'm gonna look in Western North Carolina.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the acorn search route.
We'll
So.
probably discover some huge scientific understanding. That's what we're about to do, I think.
I know, I know, right? I could just Google why are there no acorns,
Somebody's already written about it,
and I could be done with it,
right?
you know.
This is way more fun,
Yeah, I
though.
know, but it does speak to that part of the brain that where ingenuity, because ingenuity and feeding yourself, and it all requires a type of paying attention, you know. But anyway. Hootie hootie pa. That's about what it all means is that my daughter's generation says it won't matter because in 30 years we'll all be dead.
I do. I kind of worry about it. I'm like, ugh, sorry, kids.
I know, right? It's not funny, but it's also like, what are you gonna do but laugh, you know? Yeah. So I'm committed that I'm gonna start posting on the social media for her Story Garden Studios. I've committed to once a week post something about what people can do to stop just wasting, you know, like here's a way to, you know, wash your dishes with storm water, which is I used to do that in Hillsborough all the time, which I moved to Durham and I'm like, child, just turn on the tap. Yeah. But anyway, I'll let you go get your son. Oh, thanks for letting me record this. Let me stop that. Yeah. Oh, who are you in case I use this for
Oh, I am Annette Sanu Clapsaddle, talking to you from Cherokee, North Carolina.